This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode is brought to you by Our Pilates, physio-led on-demand Pilates classes designed for new mums of all fitness levels and at any stage of their postpartum journey. I particularly love the 8-week postnatal program. It's designed and instructed by Han, who's not only a physiotherapist, she's also a mother of two with 15 years of experience. This program is the perfect way to build up some strength in a way that is safe. It's done from home. It doesn't take up too much time, which we know is hard to come by in the early days of motherhood. And guess what? They're giving Ready or Not listeners an entire free month of classes. To redeem your complimentary month of Our Pilates and access a huge library of classes, simply head to their website in our show notes, that's ourpilates.com.au, and enter the code READYORNOT, all one word, when creating an account and select the monthly membership option. Rebuild strength and confidence from the comfort of your home during nap times whenever you get a moment to yourself, and enjoy the feeling with Our Pilates.
Greatest lesson that I take from sharing parts of these women's experience at home is that we are so fucking strong. There is a strength and a resilience in a mother, and no matter how we label ourselves, whether we are depressed, whether we've come out of a mother baby unit, whether we are in the first days of being a mother, that strength permeates across different stages for all of us.
That's Larissa Leone, and when I listened back to that crab, it brought me to tears. And I imagine, or at least dream, that it's sending ripples of hope and warmth through the airwaves to those who need to hear that today. She's the founder of Home, the postpartum hotel where mothers are mothered, and it's a place that's nearly a decade in the making. The place she dreamed she could go when she suffered postnatal depression after her first baby was born. In another lifetime, she worked a far more corporate job, and it's easy to connect the dots, to understand how her personal experiences with early motherhood collided with her operational background to birth Home. This conversation touches on so many hard and beautiful things. In those early days, she felt lost, wonder, a sense of unraveling, and she went to some dark places. But she emerged. And while those days will always stay with her, she learned a lot about herself and her life from moving through them. Here we talk about the I can do it all grave Larissa says she dug for herself, what it's like to now work in what she describes as a swimming pool of triggers, and why we need to give mothers more time. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the honest and hopeful Larissa Leone. And just a note, this episode touches on suicidal ideation, so take care. Larissa, if I cast your mind back to the version of you that in her corporate career hasn't had kids yet, what do you think she would think of where you are now in your career?
It'd probably be a mic drop moment for her. My God, even the person, not even the lifestyle, the person that I was back then was very, very, very different. So yeah, I think if someone had have told me, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I would be doing this, I think there'd be a lot of confusion happening for that
older version. What happened between there and then, they would ask. Yeah. So yeah. Let's find that out. Perfect segue. Take us to the career version of you who maybe isn't even thinking of kids yet. What's she up to? What did paid work life look like for you pre-children?
Pre-children work for me, I was very much sort of climbing the ladder within sort of operational management, and I was in big multidisciplinary design firms, so architects, interior designers, town planners. My husband is a builder, and so he kind of parallel to me was doing the same in the building world. And so I just had a series of jobs where I was just really absorbing as much knowledge from different people as I could. And I really had some great mentors and leaders that I learned from. One in particular who stands out, I ended up being her EA. It was just by chance. It was through one of the downturns, particularly in the design area. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do? I'll do an EA job. And it was to this woman who was a CEO, and she was just amazing. It was much more than an EA role. She actually really gave me a lot of responsibility and a lot of insight into, you know, how the board runs and, you know, all the ins and outs of what she did as a female CEO, being the only woman sitting at a table of men. So I learned a hell of a lot from her, which was incredible, and really sort of formed a lot of the pathways that I kind of then went into. So yeah, my background is very much operations and running teams of people and organizations.
Which I guess has actually a lot of parallels with what you're doing now. How did you feel about motherhood then? Did you look to the future of how you would balance a career with children? Was it something you thought about much?
No. And, you know, I think I always thought I was going to be a mother, but I certainly never thought, okay, how am I going to balance that? And, you know, benefit of hindsight, I started my first big consulting business when I was pregnant with my first child. So, you know, I just think, oh my God, what was I thinking? But going back to that balance, I thought, okay, well, I can do this and be at home with the kids, and it'll just be something really nice that I'll do on the side at home, you know, just consulting, giving advice, not doing anything too full on. And yeah, that was short-lived. Within 12 months, I had, you know, kind of grown and moved out of where we were, and it all just kind of got legs and ran away. So yeah, it was an interesting journey and not balanced at all. That concept of like, yeah, I'll work for myself and it'll be so easy. And
oh yeah, much easier working for yourself.
It is the complete opposite. And my husband started his business as well. So we both started our businesses while we were just about to be new parents. Wild.
So let's talk a little bit more about that time. You're pregnant, you're a business owner. What do you recall about how you felt, either emotionally, physically? How did pregnancy manifest alongside work for you?
My first pregnancy was amazing. Like, I was huge. Both of my kids were nearly 10 pounds. But my first pregnancy was amazing. Like, my skin was glowing, my hair was incredible. You know, I had all the things. So I feel like I almost got like, you know, fell into this false sense of what the whole journey was going to be like. And potentially, yeah, you know, that's why maybe I got copped such a thud to the ground after giving birth.
Do you think there was a sense of that looking back now? And it's funny the way our relationship, I think, has changed with the idea of a superwoman. Do you think you had that sense of feeling like a bit of a superwoman who can do it all when you were feeling good in pregnancy while also smashing goals in work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and I see this with a lot of women now, but certainly looking at myself, I absolutely dug that grape for myself of the I can do it all. You know, I can be a big high-flying businesswoman. I can be a mum. I can have kids. I can do the juggle. I can do it all. And the reality is, you know what? Yeah, I could. And I did for 10 years, but I didn't do it well. I wasn't present. And I needed a lot of help at home, which was fine. But I absolutely burnt myself out.
And you've alluded to having a newborn and going through a big time. Before we get to how that first year of motherhood looked for you, let's hone in on those early days. What do you recall most of meeting your baby for the first time?
It's a really great question. I think, you know, thinking back, I certainly thought I had to behave in a certain way. So really when I think about it, I was just a bit lost. I had no idea. You know, I thought I had connection, but really in hindsight, I don't think I did. I think I was just still like, I was almost treating this baby like a bit of an operation, you know, like being in a business and, okay, I've got this thing, I've got this project. Now, how do I do this? Because that felt comfortable for me and I felt in control if I could probably make it into that sort of language for myself. So, you know, I think there were lots of elements of just going through the motions as I thought I needed to be. And I think definitely that's where it all started to unravel very quickly for me. But yeah, I mean, look, I do remember thinking, oh my God, I've got this child and it's amazing and it's beautiful and it's unbelievable. I think there were lots of those, you know, looking at your baby going, it's here. It's not inside me anymore. So yeah, I think there would have been lots of emotions going on, but I was just very good at, I think I was a bit numb, really.
And you mentioned unraveling. Talk us through when feeling a bit overwhelmed or confused or sort of trotting along. Talk to us about when that actually manifests into something more for you, into postnatal depression.
I certainly think probably 3 months in, that 10, 12 week mark, I certainly vividly remember sort of joining the mother's group around that 6 week mark. And I was certainly like, I felt like I was walking on clouds. I don't know whether anyone can resonate with this feeling, but it was like I was so spacey because I was so tired and I wasn't able to feed properly. You know, I was having lots of issues around that. But I think really, yeah, it would have been around that 10, 12 week mark that I was just like in a world of pain, mentally, physically, spiritually, you know, everything. And that was really hard because I remember thinking, I'm into this now. Everyone's sort of going back to what they're doing. And so I need to get it together. And that's really hard when you're resisting against this innate feeling of being lost, trying, you know, it's like those two magnets, you know, two positives pushing against each other. It's just a really yuck feeling. So, but I kept pushing on probably for another couple of months. And then I just got into some very, very dark, very, very dark spaces and thoughts and was just looking for an out, really.
When you think back to those dark times, for anyone that has either been through that or might be going through that, wherever you're comfortable going, what do you recall most? What specifically did that feel like or look like for you?
It was very real thoughts about, it initially started with sort of, okay, if I just hurt myself enough that I'm not committing suicide, but I'm hurting myself enough that I can go to hospital for a decent amount of time to just sort of get away and to just have a break. And then as I think I felt the walls closing in more and more and more, then it very much became like, I just can't do this. Like, it's just too hard. I think everyone's going to be better off without me not here. And, you know, Valentina will probably have a better start to life if it's, you know, with my husband and, you know, my mom and whatnot, you know, and that's, it's scary. Like the feeling in my stomach now is just like, wow.
I was just about to ask you how that feels right now, thinking back.
My stomach is doing somersaults, absolutely. Like it's still, while I've moved through it and worked through it, and it's still a part of me, you know, all of those moments, you know, I think we always try and get rid of or banish or forget those parts that felt really, really horrible to us. But I think my biggest learning in amongst all of this has been that all of those parts are me. And the more acceptance I give to those parts, then for me, the easier it is to sort of move on and take it as a part of my life experience. And it's made me who I am today. And while it sounds kind of probably ridiculous and horrible to think that those parts of you can form strength, they absolutely do.
Yeah, it's almost like letting go of it in a healthy way instead of an unhealthy pushing it down way. When you then got help, was it someone that saw it within you, or was it you all of a sudden screaming out for help and knowing that you couldn't do this and just silence yourself any longer?
Well, for myself, I didn't get help till we decided we wanted to have our second child. So that was 12 months after I had Valentina. When I confided in my husband and said, I'm having these thoughts, I don't think they're great, we put it all down to sleep. And so the direct connection for that was, you just need to get some sleep. You're not sleeping. Let's get someone, let's sort Valentina out.
Yeah.
So we got help for V, and I sort of just continued to ride the wave, you know. And I suppose I, you know, in those dark times, I just kept hanging on to those little bits of hope of, okay, well, yeah, okay, that makes sense. If we get her to sleep and then I sleep, then I'll feel better.
So you're going through this wild time and you own a business. How does work play into this at the same time? How do you return to work? Are you working?
Yeah, my God, I think back and I'm just like, oh, I don't even know how. Yeah, I understand why when I finally got sat in a chair with the psychologist, she was like, whoa, hang on, how are you even sitting here? Yeah, I had a business partner at the time because I knew that I wouldn't be able to, you know, keep doing it. But I was still dabbling. I was still dabbling in work, and she didn't have a lot of business acumen. So she was very much a doer, which was great. So she was doing a lot of the work. But in terms of, you know, direction and all that sort of stuff, that was all still really coming from me. So it was just like, I don't know, it was crazy. She was coming to my house. So that also was part of the mask.
Oh, so you're saving face every time she comes over, pretending you have it all together while inside in a turmoil.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, I think, where it's, I also speak to a lot of mothers of their daughters who have given birth. And just this weekend, I was speaking to a mum and her daughter has 4-week-old twins. And I said, you know, how's she doing? And she said, yeah, no, she's great. She's just really good. And she's so organized and she has all of this. And, you know, it's those moments that I'm like, okay, just, I certainly don't impart any, you know, there's enough knowledge and judgment and advice that everyone imparts. But I do think to myself, you know, always just keep that ear, you know, and just,
because we can all put on a performance, can't we?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people around me didn't know anything until I started home. Yeah. And I had two girlfriends, one in my mother's group who is a psychologist, and she reached out to me and she said, I feel like I failed you. I'm a psychologist. How did I not see this? And I said, it's not your fault, but we can be really, really good at masking this, you know?
That is scary though, isn't it? Like, I can imagine how jarring that was for her, that even as a psychologist, she couldn't see what was going on because we are so good at putting on the mask.
So good. So good. So, you know, I always say, if I'm invited, just listen a lot more and observe a bit more than maybe you would, because, you know, there are certainly signs. And if you are quite intuitive, you can feel it through people. You can feel how fried their nervous system is and how much their adrenaline's racing.
When I interviewed you for the mini series that I created after I stayed at home, you talked about a very specific experience that I think a lot of mums have. It might not necessarily be punching a hole in the wall, but there's an experience like that that we've had, and it's made us feel maybe bad. Maybe it's made us feel dangerous. Maybe it's made us feel sad or unworthy. There's so many emotions that can be brought up when we're yelling or screaming or just feeling so angry in the middle of the night when our baby doesn't sleep. I'd love for you to share that story to validate what so many mums have been through, and how you put that sort of proud spin on it of that being sort of the safest thing that you could have done in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I know that everyone listening will relate to this in some way, shape or form. And look, there's certainly people that don't, you know, people do have really good mothering experiences. I don't want, you know, everyone to think that it's all bad, because there are some, you know, there's beauty in everything. But yeah, certainly when you are exhausted and it feels like the crying and the screaming and the not sleeping is never going to stop, there is a natural buildup within a human being that has to come out. And yeah, Valentina had just not been sleeping. I was exhausted. obviously there were lots of, you know, a million different things going on in my world. And I just, the rage within me was just like something physical was going to happen. I was going to vomit. I was going to have a heart attack. I was going to, something physical was going to happen. So it's like, oh, I need to get rid of this feeling. And so I put her down and I left the room. And it was kind of just, I put myself in my room and it was the first wall. And I'm like, I have to like get this out. And bashing the bed wasn't doing anything. It was like the resistance of it wasn't enough. It wasn't satisfying enough. And so I just punched the wall, but I did not think in a million years that my hand was going to go right through it. But I was so scared in that moment because I was like, I have to get away from her. And if you can picture just a constantly screaming child while you're trying to get them to sleep after so long, it makes you wild. It really does. And you do genuinely feel like the walls are closing in on you. So for me, that was the safest thing for both her and I that I could do at that time. And still even talking about it, like now my body, like I've still got goosebumps because those feelings you remember, your body remembers them.
They somehow live in you, don't they? Because they even do. You talking about a baby crying and screaming, as you know, I had a hard period where Posey was doing a lot of that. And just as you were saying that, I had goosebumps. It was like, you took me right back to that moment of my life when I was struggling.
Yeah. And I think we all feel that, but I still think there is this, we all think we're talking about it, but we're not.
No.
You know, we might do it in snippets. We might go, oh, yeah. But we've either put our hand through a wall or we've wanted to, or we've
screamed into a pillow.
We've said horrible things about our children, you know, in the heat of the moment. Like, I absolutely have, you know, we're all human and we all experience all of these things really differently. And if you can remove yourself in a safe way and get that out of your body, then 1,000% do it, in whatever form that comes for you. But I don't talk about that story often, obviously, but I certainly do. If there was anyone there, and this is certainly what, you know, I know the team do at home, if there was anyone there at that time, you know, if there was another version of me, the version of me now, back with that version of me then, nearly 12 years ago, Valentina's going to be 12 in a week, I just let her collapse. I let her fall. I would hold her falling on the floor, screaming, crying, smashing, doing whatever she needed to, but telling her that this is the best thing for you to do right now and that's okay. It's not bad.
It's interesting what you say about us thinking we talk about things, because an analogy has formed in my head where when we think we're talking about things and getting real, it's the I left the room because that was the safest thing for both of us in the moment. The things that are still left unsaid is the, but what I actually did when I left the room was punch a hole through a plaster wall and how that made me feel afterwards and the shame that I might have worn at the time. But now, as you say, can sort of be proud of, because you know that was the safest thing for both of you in that moment. So I think that's really interesting the way you've worded that. You're 12 months postpartum. You're sort of just trucking along, doing the best that you can. A lot of joy in amongst dark moments. And you're thinking about baby number two. What helps you actually get there? Does the work start then, or do you just sort of keep coasting along?
No, I was very much having parents who separated when I was quite young. I feel like I spent most of my childhood in and out of therapy. So I was very au fait with that sort of talk therapy. So I said to my husband, yes, sure, let's have another child, but I can't do that experience again because I think it will break me. And so I went off to a psychologist even before we seriously started trying or, you know, anything like that. I knew deep within me that I had to talk about that experience with someone out of my life. And so that was really, really good for me and really validating, you know. But even now, when I speak to, you know, a dear friend of mine, Dr. Edna Lagarbe, who's an incredible perinatal psychiatrist, there's still pockets of validation that if we're talking about something and she'll be talking about, I just burst into tears, you know, because there's still so many layers in amongst all of it that are untouched, you know.
Well, you don't know how to find them until you move through them, right? Like that's absolutely the journey.
And the work, because I'm now working in amongst a swimming pool of triggers, right?
Yes.
There's lots of things that I'm still discovering about myself. And, you know, wow. I love that, be it picking old wounds or, you know, finding new ones. It's all okay. And if I embody that, then I feel like my team embodies that. And then the women that stay with us get to benefit from that as well.
Yeah. You then eventually become pregnant with your second baby. What's motherhood and career life looking like at this point?
So the business had completely taken off. I think we'd grown, I think by that stage we had sort of 5 employees by then, which, you know, I always said, no, I won't employ anyone. I'll just have contractors. It'll be great. Yeah, no. So I think by then, yeah, we had 5 employees. We had moved office space again because we'd outgrown it. And so, yeah, the business was going gangbusters. We were doing really, really well. And I was pregnant with Seb. That pregnancy was good. Towards the end, I ended up getting this horrible sciatica. So it hurt to sit, stand, lay, like it was just horrendous. So that was difficult to deal with, but I kept working. We had by that stage, we decided to get a nanny because my business partner came and said, I can't do this on my own. I'm really sorry. And Seb was 6 weeks old. And I was like, oh, okay. I had been dabbling in a bit of work, but Seb was just a very different child. I was a very different human being, right? So his first night sleeping through the night, and literally when I say sleeping through the night, was like 7 till 7. And, you know, you get that fright because, of course, my first experience was like, oh, okay, this is fine. I'm going to be up all the time. Like, I'm good. I know this. And then he slept through at 4 weeks old. And, you know, you get up and you're like, oh, my God, is he awake? Is he okay? But no, he just slept through the night. So he was completely different. So that was almost a bit of a permission slip in my business brain to go, oh, okay, this is going to be different. I can go back to work.
Yeah.
So I went back to work when he was 7 weeks old.
And what did that look like? Is it he's at home, you're at home, you're doing pockets of work when the nanny's there? What did the nanny situation look like?
We had the nanny. So I went back, I'm pretty sure, 3 days a week.
And at 7 weeks?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. I look back now and I'm like, oof. Anyway.
Well, you've got to do what you've got to do.
You do.
It's just, I don't even say wow in a bad way. It's just,
yeah.
Wow.
And look, for me at the time, it felt good, right?
Yeah.
It felt like the right thing to do. It was what I was comfortable in. I felt confident. I felt good at work because I was good at my work, you know.
And the thing we forget too is 3 days for, let's say, 8 hours or less a day, it's actually not that much of the week. It's not as cut and dry as it looks. You're still bonding with your baby so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fine. And our nanny was incredible. So, you know, I didn't have that fear of like, oh my God, you know. So, yeah, I think she was with us for those 3 days from like 7 till 7. So, granted, I wasn't at work for those times, but she would certainly come and help out with brekkie and, you know, all the morning stuff and then all the night stuff. So, yeah, that's sort of where it started, and very quickly it ended up, you know, creeping into 4 days and then,
yeah
back full time. So, yeah, I think pretty much certainly by the time Seb was 3 months, I was back full time into work.
And how was your mental health at that point? Was it different baby, able to have some space in the work of psychology, feeling better? How were you?
Feels like so long ago. Sebby's 9 now, nearly 10. I think, I was fine in the sense of the word. I was fine. Yeah. He was very different. I felt really confident second time round because just so many things were different. And I really just let go that second time round. I was like, I'm not going to hang on to this perception for dear life. I'm just going to, whatever's going to be, will be. And if I'm up all night, I'm up all night, but I know I'm going to ask for help this time. I was still seeing a psychologist. So, you know, I certainly had that there. And she was obviously keeping a really close eye on me. So was my husband. So, you know, it was very different. Because work was at a different level, it needed me.
Yeah.
So I think that was fueling a lot of confidence within me, because that's where I felt really strong and really confident.
I was about to ask you if there's a sense that paid work, I don't want to use the word saved, but I can't find a better word for now. Do you think there was a sense that paid work sort of helped save you and gave you something that you needed after a pretty hard experience of postpartum?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I see so many women now, very much I look at them and go, yep, oh, I was there, you know, but I get it. I completely get it. There's a safety in it. And as human beings, all we want to do is feel safe in any moment. So, you know, that's where I felt really good. So, you know, it felt right for me at the time. I would definitely do it a little bit different. I don't think I would, you know, completely, you know, 360 the whole thing, but I would certainly do things a little bit different. You know, I would allow myself time. This is something that we do not allow mothers. We do not allow mothers time.
That's such a hard one though, isn't it? Because hindsight's beautiful, but you have this thriving business. What are you meant to do? Like, it's either I walk out, let people down, don't have that income stream anymore, or I dive in. Like, there's just not that much choice still today.
Yeah. Look, I think there's a lot, particularly now. I mean, you know, we're talking 10 years ago now, but particularly now, I think there's a lot more resources available from a woman running a business, particularly because I think when you are running your business, you do have those luxuries of, well, I'll dictate what I'm going to do, all while, you know, having that pressure of I need to get this, you know, I need to do business. I think I would have better boundaries. And so when I'm finished work, I'm finished work. It's not bleeding. You know, if I finish at 6 or 7, I'm finishing at 6 and 7. It's not bleeding into 8, 9, 10 o'clock, which that's probably the biggest thing that I would change, you know, not sitting on the playmat, you know, doing stuff and just doing a quick email, which turns into 10 emails, you know, on my phone. I'd be much more present in those times. So, you know, I think just understanding those, the little things, they do add up.
I think that even though you've said you've learned things and would do something slightly different with hindsight, I think through your work and through home, you're someone that wouldn't beat yourself up about that. No. You would say that I did the best that I could at the time. Would you say that that's true? And how do you think, for someone that does beat themselves up, how do you think we can get there? And I guess have some acceptance for the situation. It's not always perfect. We're doing our best.
Yeah, I think everyone's always doing their best, you know, and it's also that you don't know what you don't know. So there's a reason why we say the benefit of hindsight, right? But life is a constant learning experience. So, you know, we always learn more from our mistakes. You don't necessarily learn, you know, everything from your successes. And that's certainly in both business and in life. So I always say everyone is doing the best that they can do, and that's okay. You know, and if people want to be open to different ways, then that's a blessing for them. But some people find comfort in doing the same thing. And, you know, everyone gets there in the end. But I think for anyone listening that's sitting there and, you know, does genuinely feel like they're burning the candle at both ends by keeping one foot in work and one foot in home life, I think the difference for me and where I started really small was carving out like 5 minutes. And literally, without a word of a lie, Lou, it would have been like sitting on the toilet, getting insight timer on my phone and doing like a 5 minute breath work thing or a 5 minute meditation or listening to, you know, my favorite mantra or, you know, but it was 5 minutes. Sometimes there's like 2, 3 minute ones, but it was just those little things that I found like gave me hope.
Yeah.
And gave me that sense of like, okay, I've done something for myself today in amongst a 14, 15 hour day. I've done one.
I found 5 minutes.
I found 5 minutes.
Which I think is inspiring now. Once before kids, I would have been like, gee, that's depressing. But now I think that's right. Great. Carving out just a little bit of time is better than no time. I'm seeing some parallels in terms of your business acumen of how you started home, completely different business, but I'm seeing how you were well primed to be able to start something that would have a lot more logistics than people realize, I think. But before we get to the actual, I guess, more nuts and bolts of starting a business, talk to me about when the idea of home really enters your mind and what that, I guess, germination process brings up for you.
So I started thinking about home, just yearning for something like it after I had Valentina. So probably at that, around 3 month mark. So nearly 12 years ago, I thought I was Googling something that wasn't a hospital, that was somewhere I could go, that was really homely, not clinical. And it was just full of, at the time I didn't know what doulas were, but, you know, at the time I was like, midwives, you know, surely there's somewhere where they just, you go and they help you. And there were lots of places, you know, you could go to breastfeeding clinics and it was all very siloed. But in my mind, I was like, God, imagine there was something that just had everything under the one roof and you didn't have to go anywhere. And it was like all the time and you were like there for a week and you could sleep if you wanted to, but someone could help you with breastfeeding and like you could eat really, you could eat, number one, not even really well, just,
just eat.
And someone was there for your mental health. And like, I just had this, like, I was dreaming.
Yeah.
And for me, creatively, that's where a lot of my stuff comes from. I'll just sit and daydream. And I'll see it. And for me particularly, I will feel what it looks like. And so that was really the first time. And I spoke to a close girlfriend of mine and I said, do you know if there's anywhere that exists? Like, and I started telling her and she was like, no, there is not. And she was like three babies in by that stage. And she was actually the one that really helped me with a mothercraft nurse after I got really, really bad. And I said, can you imagine if there was somewhere like this? And she's like, it would literally save mothers everywhere. And I said, I know, right? Like, how does this not exist? It seems so common sense. Like, how are we not doing this? And then it just sat in my head for years. And then through the years, I would Google going, surely someone's done this. This is
like, just waiting for it to take
from on. A business perspective, I was like, there's a huge gap in the market here. Like, surely a doctor's done it or a psychologist or like someone's gotten this off the ground. No, nothing. There were lots of sleep schools by that stage. Like Masada was really big. I think Tweedle was around as well. But there was nothing holistic. There was just nothing holistic. It was either sleep or it was either breastfeeding or it was either, you know, and then you had to wait. You had to wait for like, I remember waiting like well over a month, 12 years ago for a lactation consultant. So yeah, it just sort of germinated. And then over the years, obviously my consulting business grew, that grew huge. And then I had started scaling that consulting business to eventually just move out of it and sort of just be an executive director and sort of run it from afar.
Why was that while we're at it? What made you pull back? Is it because of home or you just needed a break or what was the end goal there?
Well, yeah, the end goal was I'll scale this, pull away, and then on the side, I'll start home. I'll start doing this because no one's done it. This is wild. Rates of postnatal depression were, you know, climbing. Every woman that I would speak to about, you know, what would you think if you had this? They were like, yes. So that was the plan, to scale the business and then sort of, just have an executive director role and sort of move away from the day-to-day. And so we started doing that, or I started doing that, and then there was just a whole lot of stuff that went awry with my business partner and she decided she didn't want to scale it, didn't want to go in that direction anymore. And so I said, okay, well, I'm out. So I sold my share of it and got out. And, you know, that was another really pivotal moment for me because COVID, so that was the end of 2019. COVID started the January, like the 2020. And literally the day I settled on selling the business, we went into our first lockdown.
Wow.
The COVID.
And so then I'm thinking that, I mean, not that you weren't busy with two kids, but I'm thinking that home really started to be something that you started to plan then during COVID in the confines of your home. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. But not before I had a massive breakdown because I literally went from 100 miles an hour. You've got to think. Yeah. By this stage, we had like 15 employees. We were turning over $1 million plus, like hugely successful business that we'd built. And I was going 100 miles per hour. It was all systems go. And then it stopped.
Overnight.
Overnight.
So and what happened? You have this breakdown. How does that manifest?
Who am I? Mm-hmm. Who am I without this business? So I had a huge identity crisis because I didn't know who I was without this work. I didn't know who I was as a mother because I hadn't given myself time to sit in my motherhood journey. So I had it all and I did it all, but I did get to that point where I really understood that my work defined me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the things that I had defined me and my success. And so that was a really big fall from grace, which again, I'm thankful for, but felt like I was dying at the time.
Did it feel like when you came up for air from that, I'm almost thinking there might have been a sense of feeling like you were on your postpartum journey again? You stop this business, you go through this big reckoning with identity. And then I imagine you're thinking, I'm going to slow the fuck down for a bit and really take this in and drink up this time at home. Have I romanticized that or is that how it played out?
Look, so it ebbed and flowed through it. I think certainly through 2020, I mean, I was probably at my worst sort of at the end of 2020. That was a really difficult time for me. And of course, that predisposition for mental health, it's there. So it creeps up on you again. And my anxiety was horrendous. I mean, COVID kind of helped because you couldn't leave the house. But even when I had to, you know, going to the supermarket was just a petrifying experience for me. My social anxiety was through the roof. I had dropped like 10 kilos of weight. I was really struggling. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. But again, you know, I kind of made my way. Chugged my way through that. And then, yeah, probably the middle of 2021, I really sort of started seeing the light again and was like, okay, these are all the really good parts of me. I know that this business is needed and this service is needed. So let's start putting one foot in front of the other. And that, yeah, that took a good 3 years because it is so unique and, you know, one of a kind. No one knew what to do with it. So everyone in my advisory team was like, okay, so how do we categorize that, right? So systems and structures that are really, you know, they need to put you in a box. There was no putting me in a box because I wasn't medical. There was a food element to it. There was all these different components. So, you know, it took a really long time, but my first thing was just doing a massive amount of research. So I engaged a research company out of Sydney, spent a truckload of money on research. But
if you don't mind me asking, is this almost from selling your half of the business and then you just put that straight into doing all of this stuff for home?
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
So the cost of just those 3 years of due diligence was huge.
Yeah.
There was probably $500,000 there of just due diligence. And that's, you know, surveying, that's traveling to speak to different people, that's just lots of different things. And then building the identity of the brand, you know, it's not something that you can just, in my opinion, I knew I wanted this to be much more than at a community level.
Yeah.
And there were lots of people in the industry that I spoke to. Lael Stone, for one, I spoke to her many, many, many years ago about it. We have a mutual friend. And she said, Rhys, the amount of people that come to me with this same idea, but they started at a community level. And I'm like, no, this needs to be like
a movement,
government a serious involved. Business. Like, this is serious.
Yeah.
And so what comes with that is serious dollars. And yeah, you absolutely can do it at a community level, but it won't look like this. Like, to run something 24/7, it's a hotel. And there's so many things that come with it, just so many layers. So, you know, building a brand costs money. It has to feel a certain way. It has to. So there's months and months that go into just the name, just the what it looks like, what it feels like, before you even start on websites and social media and all that sort of stuff.
World of doulas and postpartum care can often almost not be taken seriously in a way. It's thought of this fluffy, lovely extra thing. And the people that work in these fields are thought of almost like these sort of real life angels as opposed to sort of corporate people. Was it an interesting, I feel like you've already actually alluded to this, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about it. Was it an interesting sell merging the seriousness of like, I've got this background in operations and big business and I'm bringing it to this soft, caring, gentle thing that often doesn't merge with sort of big business and big dollars? Was that a really interesting and sticky process?
Yeah, and it still is.
Yeah.
Right? Because one is really masculine and one is really feminine, right? So something that traditionally happens in big corporate business, and I think it's changing a lot now, but I still do see a lot of it, is that we always want to bring that masculinity in as a woman into a boardroom or into, you know, a meeting or whatever. I very much did away with that many years ago. And I was like, actually, you're not doing it very well, men. So I'm going to try something different. And there was a big cohort of, you know, colleagues who we were like, yeah, let's just not do this anymore. But it is jarring for people, particularly doulas, because these people are the salt of the earth. They are genuinely just the most beautiful human beings, and their approach is so different. So one of the first things I did was I trained to be a doula. So I'm, you know, a fully qualified doula, and I thought I need to kind of know what this is about, not having any care or medical background in terms of qualification. So that was sort of the first thing I went off and did. And my brain is very business and I see the ease in creating things, but it was like, okay, this is a really soft, gentle thing that I have to have lots of different language around depending on who I'm talking to. And look, that it is still really jarring for some people. And we've had some staff that have come and gone because it's just not their jam. And I get that. Yeah. You know, I really do understand that. And you certainly don't feel that in the space, but
no, you definitely don't. There's no sort of merging of corporate sort of vibes in the space, that's for sure.
But, you know, when we're talking together as a team, there are certainly elements of like, okay.
Operating as a business.
As a business, you know, I'm employing all of you. And there are times where we don't have guests and I'm still paying staff, you know. Yeah. So this is why I think we touched on it before, you know, I have so many people coming to me going, oh, I want to start a version of what you're doing in my hometown and blah, blah, blah. And can you tell me how you did it? And it's like, well, I could, but
it would be a full-time job.
Yeah. Like, it is not easy. There are so many layers to this and it's hugely costly. Yes. You know, you've got staff 24/7, and if you want good staff, they cost money. And I've got the most incredible group of staff.
You really do.
From midwives to doulas to, you know, but there is expectations of what they're being paid and, you know, how it all looks. So it's not cheap, hence why it costs $1,300 a night to stay. Yeah.
Can you talk us through what a day in the life of being at home as a guest looks like? I was lucky enough to stay on a partnership, but for anyone that's interested to know what it feels like to be at home, tell us.
So I think from the minute that you walk in the door, you feel like you can breathe again. So there's certainly that sense of taking that step back and going, okay, I'm here now. And look, I am speaking a lot from feedback, from what guests tell me as well, because obviously I can conjure up my experience of what it means to me and what it feels like to me, but I'm also not a guest. So as soon as you walk in the space, it certainly feels like you can let go. Certainly there is a period of finding your feet in the space, because it's very unnatural for us to receive any sort of care. And from the minute you walk in the door, that's what you receive. So it's a bit of a dance, that first sort of 12 hours, that first night. And for some people, it's not. They are wanting to let go. So there are certainly times where we're holding women crying within the first 10 minutes. And then others take a little while to warm, but you check in, we sit down, we unpack your bags for you, we pack it all away. And while we're doing that, we get to know each other. We build that relationship with you as a guest and your partner if they're there as well. And it might sound a little bit removed, but we don't focus initially a lot on bubs. It is all about you and getting to understand where you're at, making sure we're meeting you where you're at in your journey and understanding what that looks like for you. We already have a really great picture of how you're coming in and what you're bringing in with you. But from experience, that can change really, really quickly, depending on how safe someone feels in the space. So they'll generally open up a lot more. Then we generally run a bath. So one of the first things we do is sort of really work on that nervous system, really just bring everything down, run you a beautiful bath, get you some snacks, a warm drink. You can either have a bath with bubs or not. And then there's a series of things that will happen through that stay, depending on how we've curated it for you based off what you would like to experience. So that might be a variety of things. You might really want to have a birth debrief. You may really want to have a naturopathy consult. A massage is part of your stay, so that will be programmed in somewhere in amongst your stay. You might really want to get to know the other guests and start sharing your experiences. Sometimes that takes a little bit longer because everyone's a bit unsure of sort of, you know, whether people want to share, whether they don't. But 9 times out of 10, that table is full of women and their babes sharing all of their experiences. And
over then, delicious, you know, food.
Yeah, mind you. Amazing food. And then the days to follow are really determined by how you're feeling. So, you know, as I said, there'll be set things that you can do, but the fluidity of that is really dependent on how you're feeling. We don't take bubs away from you. You know, we really encourage that. However, if you are just like, I need to sleep, then bubs can be in the nursery for that night and we can bring in for feeds and it can look however you want it to look and however you want it to feel. You need to feel safe that whole time. So our whole focus is on you and you're guiding it. We're just there supporting you. But yeah, there's lots of foot baths, there's lots of amazing food, there's lots of downtime, which people really struggle with because they're like, because we're always doing something, right? No one's caring for us as mothers. Well, I don't want to say that. There are lots of people who are being cared for. But in this very intimate way, it's unusual.
And 24/7.
And 24/7. So it feels really hard and you're kind of like, I don't know what to do. And they're like, okay, would you like us to take bubs and maybe grab a book, go and read a book? And people are like, what do you mean read a book? What are you talking about? Or, you know, go out and sit outside. It's a beautiful afternoon under the tree and, you know, we'll give you a foot bath outside. You know, you don't actually have to do anything. You can lay there and look at the sky and just contemplate. And I keep coming back to this. We're giving mothers time back.
What have you learnt about motherhood? As you mentioned, your kids are in the sort of almost tween category, I'd say, in terms of age gap. Is that what we call them?
Yeah.
So your journey is different to mine in terms of where we are. What have you learned about motherhood today from the mothers that have walked into your space, because you do take babies up until that 1 year point. So that's a very specific age bracket that you're dealing with in terms of postpartum timelines.
Yeah. I mean, look, I always hold the curiosity of everyone's journey is different. And we absolutely see that from all of the mothers that walk in the door, and even the fathers. Yeah, sometimes the fathers actually end up needing us more than the mothers, or the mothers and the mothers. It can sometimes be really triggering because there's lots of parts of yourself that you see in other people and their experiences. And I know I don't just say this for myself, my staff certainly, you know, feel that as well. But I think the greatest pride and the greatest lesson that I take from sharing parts of these women's experience at home is that we are so fucking strong. There is a strength and a resilience in a mother. And no matter how we label ourselves, whether we are depressed, whether we've come out of a mother baby unit, whether we are in the first days of being a mother, that strength permeates at different levels across different stages for all of us. And I think that is one of the most incredible things that I see in everyone that comes through. No matter what sort of background or, you know, experience, the strength that women have and mothers have is phenomenal. Yeah, and it's a beautiful thing to see. And most of that strength is in our vulnerability. And I think that's what I wish for everyone, that we didn't have to feel or think like we needed to stand on this pedestal.
Larissa, I love the way you share your story. And I think something that you've referred to before as a permission slip to me, I think you've given a lot of people a permission slip to forgive themselves and to acknowledge the hard bits of mothering, and that it still makes them a great mother if they've done X, Y, or Z. Before I let you go, I'd love to know what you'd go back and tell that new mum version of yourself.
Oh, God. I think ultimately I would just tell her to let go. Just let go. And find more pockets of joy. That phrase, this too shall pass, it is so true. And I tell myself that lots of times in lots of different stages of my life. And, you know, running this business has felt like being in postpartum, you know, once we opened our doors. And there have been many times where, you know, myself, I think, yeah, this is how I felt in my postpartum. I felt this failure, or I felt like, oh my God, is this going to work? And oh my God, I need to generate something new, or we need to pivot, or, you know, that's motherhood as well, right? We're constantly pivoting. We're constantly juggling. We're constantly thinking of new things to do or different ways to do something, or, you know, so just sit back, let go a bit, and find those pockets of joy, because it all does pass. Like, my daughter just started year 7 today, right? Like,
wow.
It does. It really does pass. So, yeah, find the goodness in it all. And it doesn't have to feel good and it doesn't have to look good, but there is really a silver lining to everything, even when it feels shit.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story. If people want to find home online or in person, where should they go?
So home, the actual property, is located at 31 Regent Street in Elsternwick. Please don't rock up because it is.
Yeah, I was just thinking when I said find in person, that didn't really make sense. You don't drop in there.
Yeah, no, it's not a drop in. It is very much a closed sanctuary when guests are in there. But yeah, you can find us on Instagram, home, HOMB_postpartum. We also have a YouTube channel. We've got a beautiful podcast called No Place Like Home. And yeah, and obviously we're on Facebook as well. So yeah, home is HOMB, like the womb.
It's such a great double meaning. As soon as I saw it, I thought, that is brilliant. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.